Trust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. It's 12:09. Hi, I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman is the producer, and we'll go all the way till 1 in the Anna DeVlantis Show here on WGN Radio. We start today with Jason Turner. He is the head of multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management. He's been a guest before, and we welcome him back. Hi, Jason.
Hi, John. Nice to be back.
It seems to me, Jason, like so often, we just end up talking about the stalled negotiations between the White House, the Senate, and the House. We do not have a second stimulus package for people yet. Do you have any hope that we will, and do you have any idea what it will look like?
Yeah, I do have hope that we will. The economy clearly needs additional support, particularly those large number of Americans still on unemployment rolls. We saw jobless claims come in today, the first time in over 20 weeks that we've seen that number come in below a million new claims, which is encouraging. We've seen that decline by almost 500,000 new claimants in the last 2 weeks. But with so many people still out of work, some 28.3 million Americans between all federal and state programs combined still have continuing claims for unemployment, they need the assistance that is currently finding a difficult path through Congress and maybe a bit of a Band-Aid through executive order over the weekend, last weekend.
Does that mean that people are getting jobs back? And if they are, what kind of jobs are they getting? Are they getting their old ones? Are they getting the same pay, that sort of thing?
That's part of the open question that I think is really addressing this jobs recovery. If we can really call this the start of a jobs recovery, we've got 9 million out of the 22 million that lost their jobs back in the spring have returned to work at this point. We saw last week the unemployment rate fell to 10.1%. It was a bit of a surprise that it fell so much. And a lot of that was private sector employment. You know, we added 1.8 million jobs in July. 1.5 million were in the private sector. And we've certainly seen heavy hit industries like restaurants and retail return 56 and 62% of their laid off staff to jobs. Now, that still means about half of those folks are still looking for work, but a lot of them seem to be coming back into the jobs they held before, and the stimulus we had in place up through the end of July seemed to have been supportive enough that we didn't have a significant economic collapse.
Although I'd like to talk to the people, this is maybe something I'll do on my other show before noon, and that is, okay, so if you went back to your job in the hotel, the restaurant, or some sort of allied entertainment industry, are you making what you used to make? My guess is the tips and the hours would be off, right?
That would be a pretty well-informed guess, John. You're certainly seeing openings out there, but they're still 16% below where they were pre-pandemic. And there's no real hard evidence of significantly increased foot traffic into restaurants and other areas where tips are a large component of pay. So even those folks may be back at work, they certainly may not be making what they used to make.
I wonder how realistic the president's executive orders were over the weekend. And, for instance, if they forgive my payroll taxes, do I have to pay them back? And if so, then is that the best course for any of us? And will he be able to direct states to cover some of the unemployment supplements so that we do get $300 or $400? And is that going to happen? These were the executive orders or the intention of them. I wonder what the reality of that's going to be.
I think the reality is still as yet to be seen. You've got a bit of a disagreement between economists and pundits on how long it will take to get those federal payments of $300 started, whether or not all states will participate in the additional $100 of spending. From an executive order standpoint, the president's hands are a little tied in that he can't approve new spending. He can only redirect dollars from one bucket to another, and that's what he's done with the $300 supplement. The bucket that's redirected from is a Department of Homeland Security bucket for disaster relief, and that would, by some estimates, run out as fast as 6 weeks once payments start, and by others, it may last into the early part of December. Whatever actions were taken over the weekend are certainly a stopgap, a Band-Aid, if you will, until we can get Congress to approve some level of new spending. And we may may have action before they return to session. I don't think they return to session until September, but the fiscal year for the United States ends at the end of the month of August, and we may see some impetus to get something done at the start of the new fiscal year, maybe a few weeks before they would have had it been on the regular calendar of Congress.
One last thing. How encouraged are you by the strength of the markets in spite of all of this?
I think the markets are encouraging because markets and the economy exist as siblings, but not identical twins. And I say that because the market tends to be a predictive.
If we just lost him, I will leave him on that positive note. What a good line, too, huh? They're siblings, but not identical twins. Point being that, are you still there?
Yep, I'm still here, John.
Jason, you cut out. We've got just a few seconds left, but I want you to finish that thought. It sounded like you were onto something.
Sure, just finishing the thought. And markets tend to be predictive. They're looking forward, where the economy looks a little bit state of now or backward. So the markets being positive right now is a positive sign that there's elements of the future that look positive to those participants in the market, despite economic news that may be a little bit more troubling from a headline perspective.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying, and I'm glad you said it. We appreciate you joining us. Jason Turner, head of multi-asset strategies for Wintrust Wealth Management. Thanks for your time, Jason.
Thank you, John.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Ian Schur is an editor-at-large at CNET. He joins us frequently on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Welcome back, Ian. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I'm kind of intrigued by this story about Microsoft spending years and who knows how much developing a super thin screen. Can you tell me about what this technology is about?
Yeah. So, you know, Microsoft has been developing phones for a very long time. It was involved in really a lot of the phones that existed at the beginning before the smartphone revolution. They used to be called pocket PCs. They've worked with a lot of different companies. And then they bought Nokia for over $7 billion and completely screwed up and lost more than billions of dollars in all of that. And now they say that they're working on a two-screen phone called the Surface Duo. And what this is it takes two screens that are thinner than the iPad. It connects them together through a hinge and a lot of different electronics. And it allows you to basically use a phone plus this other screen to be able to do all sorts of work stuff. They say it's very good for productivity because our brains work differently when we have two different screens. That's why you see a lot of writers and stock traders and whatnot with two screens on their computer desktops. So it'll be interesting to see if this thing takes off. It's $1,400, which is a lot to ask during a pandemic and economic crisis, but Microsoft thinks that they've got an interesting device here.
So it opens and closes like a clamshell, but is it attached to my phone? I mean, is the computer running this thing my phone still?
Yeah, so it actually is its own phone. So you would actually replace your phone with this device. It is what happens is that it's designed to be able to take phone calls and all that stuff. Now, it is based on Google's Android software, so it's all of pretty much any phone that's not an iPhone these days is running Google's Android. So if you're not an iPhone user, they say it should feel very comfortable to switch over to this device. And obviously, if you are an Apple user, switching between different ecosystems is hard enough. But it's an interesting idea that they've got here.
One last thing about it. How big is it then?
So it has two 5.6-inch screens that are mashed together. So if you think about it, holding it, it's a little smaller than one of those dime store books is the way I think of it. It's just kind of designed to be able to actually be pocketable, even though when you open it up fully, it's almost the size of like a 7-inch tablet.
Is this available now? When will it be available?
Pre-orders today and yesterday, actually, is when it started, and they're going to start shipping it September 10th. Although, of course, the coronavirus has upset a lot of manufacturing around the world, so it might come out a little slowly.
And that's called the Surface Duo?
Yeah, as in two screens, Duo, yes.
Sarah Cooper is this internet star on TikTok, and I noticed that she was co-hosting or hosting Jimmy Kimmel's show the other day, and she said something interesting. In the promo for her doing that, she said, "Hi, I'm Sarah Cooper, and I'm the reason your grandparents know about TikTok." And I thought, that's kind of true. TikTok is in the news almost every day now, isn't it?
It is. And I think part of what's really fascinating about that app is that it has inflamed a real interesting conversation in this country about what our American values are around whether or not we're willing to ban free expression when it comes from another country, how we want to handle this, what the limits of national security are, and all sorts of stuff. You know, this app, the President Donald Trump has said that he is going to shut it down on September 15th if it's not owned by an American company. And by the way, that also includes WeChat, which is a very popular chat app that's used a lot in China. It's not as popular here in the U.S., but it's so popular around the world that there are estimates out there that if Apple were forced to ban it in the United States from their App Store, it could slow down iPhone sales by as much as 6%. And if it's banned around the world, right, so let's say President Trump comes to Apple and says, you have to ban TikTok and WeChat from all of your devices, no matter where they are in the world, this analyst says that iPhone sales could drop as much as 30%. That is a huge number when you consider one of the world's most largest and most powerful tech companies.
The president has the authority to do that?
Well, I think that question is what's been on the minds of a lot of people these days. And honestly, it's hard to tell. You know, the power he is invoking is something that people point out, that during times of national emergency, the executive branch has a lot of latitude to be able to make rules and to control what's going on here in this country. But there is a possibility this could be stopped. And TikTok, by the way, has said they're going to sue to stop this. But there's no guarantee that the courts are going to step in and do anything.
Can you tell me what the scope of it is, this notwithstanding? How does it compare in terms of users or revenue to Facebook and Twitter and so forth?
Sure. So WeChat, we don't have a ton of data on. We know it's likely the most popular chat app in the world. So that makes it bigger than Facebook and WhatsApp and everything. As far as when it comes to TikTok, TikTok has about 100 million users in the U.S. That is according to that company.
Wow.
And which makes it, you know, that's a third of the U.S. population right there. And then it has over a billion installs around the world. But again, the company is not being very forthright about the data. So we're basing a lot of this stuff on external view data as well. But it makes it one of the most popular apps in the world.
It's interesting, too, the cross-pollinization, right? I don't have TikTok. I see TikTok videos on my Twitter feed, though. So
yes,
it gets a little gray.
They're very good at that.
Yeah. Talk to me about Uber and Lyft. I saw some news about them and what their employment status is, the drivers with those businesses. What are we hearing about?
Yeah. So there was a California court that ruled on Monday that essentially Uber and Lyft have to treat their drivers like employees and allow them to possibly have benefits, which is an enormous step in this long debate about whether or not drivers for Uber and Lyft are employees. And by the way, it's worth noting, some of them want to be. They want to have benefits. Some of them don't want to be. So now that this ruling has happened, Uber is, of course, trying to fight it, as is Lyft. But if they're not able to successfully fight it, they believe they're going to have to shut down later this month their entire company. And it'll take them until at least the fall, November-ish, until they can reopen with all of these new people who used to be independent contractors now as employees.
How expensive would that be for those companies?
I mean, it's mind-boggling. I have no idea. There are people who have estimated whether or not Uber can even be,
right,
and Lyft can be successful companies,
right,
under that rule, and we don't know.
It's a maybe it's illegal or question. Maybe it's kind of like an ethical one. That is, if I want to have a business where I say, hey, you pick that person up and drive them over there and drop them off there and you'll get some money and I'll get some money, maybe the government and all of these regulations don't need to come into play. It seemed to be sort of a nimble idea that the internet fixed, and now we're sort of mucking up the works. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I think if health insurance were not tied to employment, which is a large criticism of the way the United States workforce works, right, where if you don't have a job or your job often is where you get health insurance, I think this debate would be a lot less dramatic. You know, part of the problem here is that a lot of those independent driver contractors have to spend a ton of money on health care outside of it. They also have to spend a ton of money on maintenance of their cars. And some of them are fighting really hard to get Uber to help pay for some of that. If at least the health care thing were handled by a different entity, Uber has actually argued for a combined benefit plan, like you could join kind of a driver's union, and that's where you would get your health insurance, that then this would probably be a lot less of a dramatic debate.
And I guess that makes my point all over again. Is it the business of Uber to have to provide for those sorts of benefits for those people? They could say, then don't drive. These are our terms of service.
Yeah, I mean, look, California law and the California judge has said it is, that is Uber's job, that if they're going to tell drivers what they can do and where they can go and how, you know, when they sign on to the platform, it's Uber that makes all the decisions at that point, then they have to be treated like employees. And I don't know what the right answer is. I do know that there are a lot of drivers who struggle in daily life because the costs of being an Uber driver are too high, and even though they want to be able to make it work, they're not able to. And that is sad, because I think there would be a lot more people doing this willingly instead of, you know, this is their last resort, if they didn't have to worry about stuff like maintenance cost and health care.
Not as many rides out there for those drivers these days either. There is...
No, but that's a temporary problem, hopefully, right? We're all crossing our fingers.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that today as I was walking to work. I thought, when's the last time I took an Uber? And it was before March 13th. And I didn't take one every day, but I used to take one every couple weeks. Okay.
Yeah, they've had rides drop 3/4 in the last few months, but they are not completely destroyed by this. Their Uber Eats platform, which is where you can have food delivered to you, has actually grown substantially. And just conveniently, the company believes that a lot of that is going to be the future of the company anyway, so it's working out for them, kind of.
No end of interesting reading at CNET.com, and interesting conversation from Ian Schur. We'll visit again. Thanks, Ian.
Absolutely. Take care.
So starved are we for entertainment, and for that matter, is the entertainment industry starved for you? That here's a headline for you. AMC is reopening its theaters next week with 15-cent tickets. In my life, I've never paid 15 cents, and I'm getting old. AMC is reopening theaters next week with 15-cent tickets. Amy Guth talks about that and more in about 15 minutes. Right now, speaking of entertainment, Sam Makarian is on the phone line. He's the co-founder of Hostiva. You don't want to maybe stay in some high-end hotel or low-end hotel. You'd think maybe an Airbnb, but then you miss the fancy accommodations. What about a luxury vacation home rental? You're staying in a luxury home. This is not a new business, but maybe it's one that is better positioned now than ever. Sam, welcome to WGN Radio. How are you?
Very well. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
That's my understanding of your business. Is that how you describe it too?
Yes. We are a basically luxury vacation home rental platform and management company.
So how's business been then since March 13th for us here in Chicago? That's when we kind of shut down.
Yes. You know, of course, no question, COVID has a devastating effect on the travel industry overall, but we were able to weather the storm. Many of our big competitors and hotels are actually closing down, but they were able to onboard, you know, more properties and also have more choice for our travelers. We see that many travelers to choose a vacation rental homes over hotel to avoid the, you know, overcrowded hotels, elevators, and many other aspects that with the social distancing.
So are your business, so where are these properties?
We work in 15 markets all the way from Miami to Seattle and San Diego. So we have traditional destination markets like Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, Gulf Shores, Alabama, and we also have urban markets like New Orleans, Dallas, Nashville, Miami, and it's a mix.
Describe for me the typical property at Hostiva.
Properties are 2 bedrooms up to 9 bedroom houses, condos, villas. They all have full kitchen, all the items that you need for cooking. They all have a house in unit laundry that you can. It's basically you're staying in someone else's housing with the standards, right? In our slogan, we say hotel standards, comfort of a home. So we try to merge both hotel standards and the comfort of the home to one model that you feel like you are in a home, but it's not a gamble. You know, it's professionally managed. The cleaning standards is no less than hotel standard.
Yeah. Are you guys in Chicago? Do you have properties here?
Not yet. Not in Chicago yet, but our dream, actually.
Oh, your dream, actually? Are you kidding me? You guys
yes,
should be.
Yes, I love Chicago.
I do, too, and it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because as wonderful a city as Chicago is, we've had some bad press lately, but it's a wonderful city to visit. But I think people are afraid of big cities generally, so maybe they don't even want to go to New Orleans because of either the density of the population or they're afraid that when they get there, the clubs won't be open, right?
Yes. Yes. I mean, this is all temporarily. I think, travel industry will rebound even stronger, and people still going to travel when all this COVID stays history.
And maybe right now, because people are so itching to get out, that they will yet do it, right? So I don't want to stay in Chicago anymore. I do want to go to New Orleans. I will go to New Orleans. I'll find something to do when I get there, and I won't have to worry about where I'm staying. I'll stay at one of these high-end properties.
Yes, and many people actually come because right now they can work from home, and kids actually can go to school virtually. So they choose to go places like stay in 1 month in Nashville, stay 1 month in Miami, stay in 1 month in the mountains. You know, as long as you have internet, you can do your work, your kid can go to school. So this is actually kind of a time that you can actually use the opportunity to do those type of stuff that wasn't possible before COVID.
What are your most popular destinations then, Sam?
Right now is the beach and mountains market because you can actually socially distance and same time you can leave and have a vacation at the same time.
Yeah. So what does that mean? Denver, you mentioned Gulf Shores. Give me some cities or states.
Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, Pensacola, Miami, Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, Myrtle Beach, so Colorado Mountains. So it's, again, it's where you have a beach or you have a mountains to hike and do all these activities.
Hostiva, HostiEeva.com. Hostiva.com is the website. Sam McOrion is the CEO and co-founder. Well, good luck to you, Sam. You've sort of piqued my curiosity. I think a lot of people are going to click through.
Please do. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and put Chicago on the list. We'd love to have some folks come and stay around here. We got some folks that I'm sure would love to make some money having your screened customers come through their places. It's 12:41. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here's more business news.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. The president of a property management group is telling the mayor she needs to do more to make residents feel safer. The president of Chicago-based Sudler Property Management wrote in a letter that residents from the Gold Coast to Edgewater do not feel safe now. The company represents more than 22,000 homeowners. Chicago CME Group is set to launch a volatility index futures contract in October. CME says it will base the new contract on the NASDAQ 100 volatility index. And the Evanston City Council has voted not to negotiate a new deal with ComEd to operate within the city when the existing agreement expires in September. Chicago is still negotiating. ComEd is mired in a federal corruption scandal. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Agribiz with Orion Samuelson.
the adding up of the storm damage earlier this week that moved all the way from South Dakota across the heart of the Midwest and moved on to Ohio before it lost much of its punch. But they're still adding up the damage, and besides the flattened cornfields, because the winds did flatten the cornfields, which will make harvesting more challenging because of the downed corn. But in addition to the corn crop, grain bins that were standing empty waiting for this year's harvest were also targets of the heavy winds, and a lot of the grain bins are flattened, according to the Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Iowa. He said 340,000 customers of an internet company in Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana, as well as the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City corridor of eastern Iowa, particularly hard hit by the storm. So they're still adding the value of the loss so far, and we probably won't know till we get to harvest time and early next year. Meanwhile, I know a lot of you are missing activity, but I certainly am, because this month I'd be attending a county fair or a state fair several times a week. But with the COVID-19 situation, county fairs and state fairs are postponed until next year, and so we're without those activities as well. And the other story that we're concerned about is how effective will be the virtual outdoor farm shows be, because the Farm Progress Show will be a virtual show, which means that you'll not be there, but you can be there virtually. And it's just really a different year for food festivals, county fairs, state fairs, Farm Progress shows, and everything else that goes along with it. So I, for one, can hardly wait for next year so that I can get back on the fair circuit, and I would guess a lot of you would feel the same, especially those of you who enjoy the sandwich fair every year. Not going to be held this year, along with a lot of the county fairs in the Chicagoland area. And let me mention again that farmers markets are open and looking for your business, but be prepared to experience different situations on produce that you'll not be allowed to touch until you buy, and don't bring your pets, and many of the other situations because of the COVID-19. Quick check on the grain market prices today. We're doing pretty well, actually. The September wheat contract up 6 cents a bushel. The September corn contract is up 12¾ cents. And the August soybean futures trading 20 cents a bushel higher. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the August lean hog contract is up 67 cents a hundredweight. August live cattle up 62 cents a hundredweight, and the August feeder cattle contract down 15 cents a hundredweight. That's your money on 720 WGN.
It's 12:50 on WGN. Amy Guth joins us now to talk about a couple of wrinkles on the business front, often on the airline industry. But look at this headline, Amy, about movie theaters and quite a discount. This is kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So, you know, you and I have talked about AMC before because of you know, how they've been navigating during the pandemic, and how certain big production or distribution companies, rather, have really rethought how they're releasing films in this moment. So AMC is reopening many of its theaters next week. They're doing that with 15-cent tickets, and that's part of kind of a throwback for their own, to commemorate their own centennial. And so they're offering, you know, 1920 prices in 2020 to kind of celebrate that. But even then, beyond that, there's going to be a lot of movies that they're going to be offering for about $5 a ticket, and, you know, some older films that have been out for quite a while. So it's going to be interesting. So we're talking Back to the Future, Black Panther, The Empire Strikes Back. Like, some of those movies have been out for a very long time. Some not as long, but certainly not new releases that are still in the theater. they're trying to kind of shift in a moment when Mulan was kind of the big holdup, and a lot of people were wondering what's going to happen with Mulan because, you know, that was a big one that everybody was kind of waiting on. And then, you know, Disney pivoted and said, you know what? Nope, we're going to do this on Disney Plus first and then release it later. So a lot of things going on there, and I think it's really like a lot of eyes on the entertainment industry in terms of like, well, what does a film release look like now? Is it always going to be theatrical and then go to video or video on demand, or can we go video on demand first and maybe bypass the theatrical part entirely? So I think that's really interesting. But for now, in a lot of states, AMC theaters are going to open. They have some new rules with them, so you will not be in a packed theater, which, I don't know, I think that's kind of good news. Sometimes being elbow to elbow with a stranger is a little awkward, but you know, it will be way fewer people in the theater. They said they're putting in new ventilation systems, and you will be required to wear masks while you're there in the theater.
Well, how am I going to eat my popcorn? I wonder if they're going to have snacks.
Yeah, well, that's actually a very good question. I didn't think to ask, but I think that's a great one, right? With your, what does that do to concession revenue and things like that? You and I have talked about the big hit that Coca-Cola and companies like that took because so much of their product is not in the individual bottles. It's in events when they're sending like big, big quantities of products, events and movie theaters and sporting arenas, things like that. So that's a great question. How does the mask requirement work with all that? Can you take off the mask once you sit there? So it's like a restaurant? Unclear, but I'm sure there will be hiccups along the way because, you know, it also depends on people wanting to go out and go into the movie theaters when I think a lot of people have gotten probably pretty cozy at home watching movies that way. So we will see, but that's what they're doing for now. And they're going to kind of open that with this 15 cents a ticket. That's on August 20th.
AMC theaters, and not all of them, but some of them throughout the country. Okay. Flights to Florida. We just talked to a guest from Hostiva. He has luxury vacation home rentals, and most of the most popular destinations for him were in Florida. Can you talk to me about flying to Florida these days?
Yeah, so United announced a strategy that they're doing. They're going to add quite a few nonstop flights from cities that don't normally have a nonstop. So we're talking about Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Indianapolis, Columbus, Cleveland, Boston. Most of those places you'd have to fly through Newark or Chicago to get on your flight to Florida. So they're adding nonstop flights from to Fort Lauderdale, Fort Myers, Orlando, and Tampa. That's starting November 6th. That's going to go through January 10th, which is generally the end of, you know, holiday travel time. And, you know, so there's a lot of things that are we need to be watching there too, right? Because Florida had so much impact of COVID. A lot of high case numbers, high death numbers. Will people still want to go there and fall out in the winter like they typically do? And I think, you know, in the leadership team's comments as they announced this, I think they're aware of that, you know, and they said, we're going to have to pivot. If it turns out people don't want to go there, we're going to have to do something else. But they're making this bet that, hey, people have been cooped up, and by the time it gets cold, they're going to want to get into someplace warm.
You know, way I feel about that, Amy, is that if most people don't want to go, that's okay. You can live off of some of the people. If 30% of the population said, I'd be willing to travel, given a good destination and a good price, well, then go get those 30%. 100% of the population doesn't do anything, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, I think what the big question marks are, because this is a big gamble for them, because this assumes that they can fill all of those planes profitably. So that wouldn't take 100% of the population, as you said. That's exactly right. But will it be enough? Because, you know, they have seen such a huge hit in the travel industry and taken such a huge hit in terms of filling planes. So different airlines have tried different strategies for how to fly profitably. You're adding 28 flights a day. That's pretty significant, and you know, to keep those filled. So that will be one thing to watch. The other part that's kind of a lesser issue, but still nonetheless one of those, is that a lot of the efficiencies, that the reason you have hubs is because you can kind of make efficiencies out of those out and back trips from hub to hub. So by adding these from cities that aren't hubs, some of those efficiencies in terms of logistics, in terms of flight control logistics, things like that, are not going to be there, and which can be a factor in revenue. So those are kind of the two places I think will be interesting to watch. Again, this starts November the 6th. It runs through January 10th. But if it turns out to be something really profitable, who knows, they could extend that. But for now, they're doing that in a way that, you know, the language around this announcement was very much like, you know, this is a thing we need to take advantage of this moment and pivot and try new things and really think our business planning. And if this doesn't work, we're going to need to pivot again. But for now, this is the plan.
So if you're in one of those smaller markets or know someone who is United, we're talking about United adding flights to Florida. The flip side is interesting to me. American Airlines is going to drop service to some cities, right?
Yeah, I thought this was so interesting to see these two stories kind of back-to-back today. So American is doing pretty much the opposite. They've announced they're announcing that, hey, we're preparing to drop service to a lot of smaller cities. Part of that has to do with federal aid that you and I have talked about many times. American got $5.8 billion in support under that program. And we've mostly talked about the looming layoff. So part of the conditions of that funding was you cannot lay off a bunch of people before October 1st. You got to keep with it. The other part of that is you cannot make huge cuts to your flight service. So the federal point of view on that was, we don't want to give you this money just so you can like stockpile tons of cash.
Right.
We're giving it to you so you can keep going. So they are doing exactly the opposite of what American is, and they've announced plans to real service, pretty significant cuts, I should add. Pretty significant, like 30 different destinations. These fall schedules could start showing up in about a week or so. But we will see. If there is another package that benefits airlines, this could get kicked further down the road. But for now, they're kind of making those plans, saying, hey, come October 1st, we're going to have to make some decisions. We need to start now.
Tightening the belt at American. Amy Guth, keeping you posted. Nice to talk to you today, Amy. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, John.